So today we have, and last day's even as well, but today in specific, we have asked you to look at pain, at suffering. And that's something very challenging, but yet it's really something the Buddha points us to right from the start. He really starts his teaching with acknowledging suffering. In the First Noble Truth, he does say, because there is this noble truth about suffering. Birth is suffering. Age is suffering. Aging is suffering. Dying is suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are all suffering. Association with what you dislike, being together with what you like, with you, what you don't like, being together with what you don't like is suffering. Being a part of what you like is suffering. Not getting what you want is suffering. Getting what you not want is suffering. So it's quite explicit. And it starts with something very existential, and sometimes it seems to be far away. Aging and dying is not quite right happening to us right now. But, and maybe there's some no sorrow and lamentation right now, but there might be in the next instant be something like a fly flying into your nose and you just don't like it. A bit of suffering. A little bit. It's annoying. Or you are with something which you really like and then it disappears and you just remember it was so nice. Or could I have that again? And not being with what you like is suffering. Yesterday in our go-round, someone said, it's all nice about all this Sankhara is not being real, not being the true me, but actually my pain feels real. And it's really true. It is real when it's there. The Buddha didn't deny the reality of suffering. Instead, he really points us, acknowledge suffering. It's there. So when we say, oh, we want to transform it, we want to transcend it. It's not at all meant not to acknowledge it. It's not meant to say it's not there. It's not a way of denial, again. Instead, we are asked to deeply investigate suffering. And that's something that we don't do once. In our spiritual journey. Actually, it feels like it's deepening and deepening and deepening this understanding of suffering, for me at least, in these last 25 years of my practice. So, and I still feel I haven't quite understood it all. So, it's really profound and it's important. Suffering is, in a way, next to many joyous things. There's a lot of joy in our life. There's a lot of good things in our life. It's not all suffering, okay? But this, out of the suffering, there arises a lot of problems. That is the reason why we act in certain ways that causing more suffering. It's somehow squeezing the heart, there's something that is oppressing. And if you want to be free, it's the thing we have to investigate. And it's something we can be assured of in, if you read this definition of suffering the Buddha points to, it's something everyone is experiencing. Everyone experiences in his life, in her life, suffering at one point or another. Just to swallow something in the wrong tube is a way of suffering. Everyone does once in his or her lifetime. And suffering in a way, the strange way, is something that connects us. We all, or just the thought, give it a thought. Every one of us is experiencing suffering. If not right now, then some point in the future. And there's something in my heart, if I think about that, that brings you close to me. We're suddenly in one boat. We're not apart anymore in different boats. Everyone trying hard to get to the happiness. You know, so we almost like on a race, who's quicker in being getting happy. Rather than that, and, you know, comparing ourselves and getting jealous, knowing, oh, there might be a next wave coming of suffering. So, we all are in this one boat. It's central to our life. It is going to occur. And we cannot live in a wise way if we don't look at it. So we look at it not in order to drown in it or to get desperate about it. It's actually something that can enrich our life. First, because it brings us close. It brings a certain depth to our life. And we can start to live, respond to the suffering in ourselves or in the world from wisdom. If you understood suffering deeply, then we can act wisely. If you haven't looked at it, we will act blind. And that will cause suffering, usually. So, the whole spiritual journey starts with acknowledging that there is suffering and looking at it, penetrating deeply into it again and again. Not just once, and then we're done, and then we come to the letting go, where we quickly want to go to. Letting go, letting go, letting go. That's what we want to hear. We don't want to hear about suffering. Actually, it's the first time I'm talking extensively about suffering in my teaching career. Well, that's something to ponder about. It is a deep, challenging subject. But if we dive into it deeply, it opens us to compassion. It opens us to love. So also here again, it's not about getting stuck there. It's really, if we let it touch our heart deeply, the natural response will be compassion. And compassion is something that is soothing. It's soothing ourselves. Is soothing another. It's not the drowning, the mutual drowning in the suffering. Yeah? Where we feel awful afterwards. Compassion and love, to really embody it, is for me so much what it means to be fully a human being, to come to our full potential, what it means to be a human being. And it's not that we are the only creatures on this earth who can feel compassion. It's reported of some animals to have been seen acting in a certain way that one could imagine that they feel a little compassion. So I like that, because it feels like, okay, look at these creatures out there. We don't understand them really, what they feel. But maybe they have also an access to compassion. But we certainly, as humans, we can in a great way find access to compassion. And whenever I see or hear a story which is full of compassion. I don't know how you feel about this. It really touches something. And that's something that I feel immediately, oh yes, I would like to be in such a way. I can't imagine sometimes. It feels too big. But it does really inspire me in a deep way. And with this compassion, with this love, that is leading us to the end of suffering. We want to end suffering. It becomes something really important, primal in our lives, to end suffering. So if we are on our journey, it's again and again, also we want to really look where we're going, why we're practicing, what's the aim of our practice? Do we want to get happy? Do we want to get at ease? Or do we want to embody full compassion? That's slightly a little different. In the end, to really embody compassion, for myself, it's really becoming truly happy. But it's not this happiness which is not feeling any pain. It's open to pain. It's not always pleasant. It's open to pain. So let's look a little bit at the suffering, to investigate it a little bit. I want to just give you some ideas how to get more deeply into this realm of suffering. Yes, of course, there's this suffering which is inevitable. It's going to strike us as much as we try to avoid it. We're going to get, at a certain point, we will be getting sick. Some people never get sick, seems like, but almost never get sick. And other people are sick a lot, so they run to the doctors quite a bit. I seem to have quite a bit of running to the doctors. My bony structure doesn't seem to be quite as I would like it to be. So that seems to getting aches and pains and inflammations and all sorts of things. And a lot of people never have anything. So if they have a flu, that's a lot. So, but a flu, every now and then, everyone seems to get. But at a certain point, we're all going to die. How healthy we are, we're going to die. Seems like far away. I mean, I'm 52 now, so it's like it's getting closer, actually. Since I'm 50, seems to nag on me every now and then. Before I was like, yeah, far away. But now I kind of, it's a little closer. But still, it feels like that something, it's an interesting thing our mind does. It somehow clouds us in a way that it really doesn't feel like I'm going to die. And anyone who at certain point might get goes to the doctor and is getting told, oh, you've got this really serious disease, you might die in a few months, in a few years, you've got something. And it does something. It is shocking. It shows that we kind of, there's a strong clouding of the mind. Or just recently in a retreat in Germany, I spoke to a young woman who has been, helping, being in a humanistic force, can you say that, in the war of Syria. So she was working, helping there with the civil war, and a bomb exploded next to her, and she survived quite healthy, traumatized. And I asked her in the retreat, did you think about it before you went? She said, no, of course you don't think about it. You don't think about something that happened to you. You just go. That's so in many ways, this function can also be helpful because it makes people go and help even there. To really fully understand this truth of suffering somehow shifts something into perspective. It really, sometimes, it clarifies what's important. Whether we're going to quarrel about something, whether we're going to hold on to a certain issue. If you would know that this person is going to die, if you wouldn't see them again, would we leave without saying something nice? So that's for me often the question when I leave home. Is there something I might not come back? Is there something I need to let go of? Something I have to amend? Something to shift? Or if I'm holding on to something, that's a question I ask myself sometimes. Is it really important in the face of death to hold on to? And really let it sink a little bit. It might shift things. Or whatever we're striving for. So that's an important question we can hold in mind. Then there's a lot of physical suffering, more or less. And that's something we might need to acknowledge sometimes. And sometimes we can do something about, and sometimes we can't do something about. But then it's a question what we do with it, how we react to it. Then there's socially induced suffering. That's an interesting one. It's what I mean with this, it's pressure we might feel from our social environment. Maybe we feel a lot of pressure to become really successful in our profession. Or to be successful means to have a certain career, a certain education, or a certain status. Being married and having children, and if we are not, or if we, in our sexual orientation, if we are different, we might feel a lot of social pressure. My hairdresser in Berlin comes from Venezuela, and he came to Germany because he's gay, and he just couldn't, there was so much social pressure on him, that he left his country. It's amazing sometimes to consider these things. It's not. Social pressure can induce a lot of suffering if we don't fit into this, if we don't want to fit into this. It can be very restrictful. Or we have to be beautiful in a certain way. I mean, a lot of the suffering women have. You know, we have a lot of role models. It's the same for men. They have their role models. Yeah, and if they fit into this, being big guys and strong and healthy and, you know, lucky, what if you're not? You're small and slim and, you know, and so there are those kinds of sufferings. And they're also quite serious. Or laws that are unjust. Not every law human made are just laws. Some of them are pretty unjust. Yeah? So a lot of suffering comes from that. There's a lot of psychological suffering, seems a lot in the West. From many of the things I'm saying, they might be intertwining, but so in the real, if we feel not lovable, if we feel unworthy, if we feel we are a loser, yeah, whatever that means. But if you have impressions like this, thoughts about this, and feel like this, this is a real suffering, and it does shape our life. Deeply ingrained habits of self-hate, And there's suffering, which is a little bit, I call, self-made. That's the way we act. Suffering that comes out of being greedy, for example. Or acting out a lot of jealousy, or envy, or anger. Reacting to people in an angry way. And, or putting others down. So we might just by that action, we are causing pain. We're causing pain actually to ourselves by acting it out, if you look quite carefully. But we're also causing pain in our surrounding, in other people. And they, by themselves, acting back to us. Someone's really greedy. What you're going to install in the other people? What's going to arise? Then you feel angry towards you. If you take all the food, hasn't happened yet, but just imagine. Few, we would need a few. But I remember this in the monastery in Thailand. And we had to go in a fixed queue. It was really clear who was going when. That's the way it's done there. So I had my certain place quite at the back of the line, because the first came the nuns. It was just the women, just the nuns in the order of how long they were ordained, and then the lay women who were practicing, and then the lay women who didn't practice. So I was in the middle. I was practicing, but I was not a nun. And there were a few nuns before me. And there was one woman from New Zealand, or Australia actually. And she came later, but then she ordained. And that meant she could go in the line before me. Okay. That's fine. It was enough. But she was the one. She, every day. I mean, when we came, there were some fruits next to the rice, which was cold, and a lot of meat dishes. If you want to eat meat in retreat, you go to Thailand. Also cold. There were a few greeneries. That's okay. And then a bit of fruit. And normally all the fruit was gone, except of a bowl of watermelon. And usually the bowl of lemon was still full. So there were five, six pieces of really big pieces of watermelon. And in front of my eyes would empty the whole bowl every day. So I thought, that's an example of greed. Not sharing. I mean, my mind was immediately going into anger. I didn't like her anymore. That was it. Watermelon. And it did show me, I mean, it was something minor, but it's also, I mean, it shows different ways we can go in different directions. Of course can let go of watermelon. But if you are in a place like this, not just for a few days, but for weeks and months, then you know you don't want to go home soon. This is it. Yeah? And you never get any fruit every day. And someone is eating it right in front of your eyes. That gets something going. Of course, I can work on my anger and blah, 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 yeah? But it's also learning, acknowledging this is causing pain. If I take everything for myself, it's causing pain to someone else. And this person won't like me. Yeah, it is causing anger, it's causing frustration, it's causing alienation. So it's an important thing to know if you're greedy. That's the effect of greed. Everything. I might be happy, but what am I causing in the world is a big question. So we might not feel it straight away. If we look deeply into greed itself, if we remember to do that, we feel the pain. But often we're so hooked with greed in mind, we're so hooked on the object, and that's pleasant, that we don't see that the greed in itself is painful. So that's the problem with grief. But often it comes back. It's not creating harmony and peace. It's creating friction and anger. So that's what I call self-made. You have a choice. You could share the watermelon. You could share a little bit. That's what I say, self-made. Same with anger. If we act out the anger, if we just don't care about how we speak and how we act, we're not surprised that anger comes back. We're creating the suffering. So there's a importance to look at how we act. So how we act is, so we act in a skillful way in order not to cause suffering in myself as much as in the world. Then there's the suffering which is simply passed down through the generations. And we explored that a little bit, specifically in this context of this retreat, that sometimes it's not even, doesn't really fit into all these other categories. It's something unique where someone is trying to cope with something painful. And the way they cope, which is totally understandable, yeah, is affecting the next generation. Like, from what I read about research, which has been done, how, what happens in the generations who come either of victims of the Holocaust as much as in the ones of the perpetrators, the Nazi families, showing that there's a lot of suffering coming from the way people coped with all of that. And the way people cope with trauma is one way, one seemed to be very much in place in a lot of families, was silence, not being able to talk about it. And such a silence is not a pleasant silence as we experience it here in retreat. It's an unpleasant silence. You know, as something which is dark, which is heavy, which is somewhat daunting, and it's not going to be talked about. And of course, as children, we have all sorts of imaginations. Why? Why is this happening? We take it personally. We feel like, oh, it's our responsibility to make the others happy. It's our responsibility to fill that gap. We don't even know what gap. We don't understand. It's a lot of confusion. There might be a lack of love because there is this big wound which has closed the heart, and we don't understand why we are not getting the love. We take it personally. And it's a tremendous pain, tremendous suffering. And so important to understand that. First, understand that it has nothing to do with us and why it happened, to feel compassion for ourselves, for the ones who couldn't speak, and to heal it. Sometimes this kind of traumas of one generation gets passed on also in forms of expectations, of hopes. You shall have it better. Please, you fulfill my dreams. Whatever I couldn't live, I want you to live this. So we put a lot of pressure onto the next generation. And we might have experienced that. So also that kind of suffering. The better we understand it, the better we can see where we can unhook, where we can unravel the suffering. The Buddha spoke also about the suffering of identification. It was very subtle suffering. Identification in any way is a source of suffering. Somehow squeezing the heart, which is unbounded, which is free. Somehow any identification puts a cramp around it. But we keep doing that. We keep doing that. That's a very instinctive form of process in the mind. So, you probably, if you investigate it even further, you will find many, many shades of suffering. I didn't put it into the talk, but this today came, oh yeah, there's the suffering of control. Having to control all the time. So, there's subtle things we can feel. Yeah, suffering, yeah. So we can look and classify suffering in many different ways. Traditionally, suffering is a little bit classified in a different way, but I did want to do it this way today. And some of the suffering asks of us a response. Or we can respond to it, we can do something about it. And sometimes that takes a lot of courage. We might be suffering because we're living in a situation, and if you want to end the suffering, you have to change something. Get a new job, leave the partner, leave the country, whatever. Go for an operation, have a talk, inviting someone to talk about a difficult issue. So sometimes it's asking of ourselves a response. But other times, it seems the only way what we can do is accept it. Accept the suffering as part of our lives. And in fact, if we look even at the one we can respond to, it always starts with acceptance. The first step is always accepting it. Because it is the key to find some clarity what's going on. Therefore, we actually can do something. We can only see, we can only get clear, some kind of clarity if we first accept the suffering, the pain. And out of that acceptance, we can come to compassion. And compassion is the place from where we want to respond. Any other place from where the response comes to is a response out of anger. If you look at suffering, what happens? We don't want it. That's usual. Yeah, that's, of course, we won't want it. Every time you shift position, that's a place where you can look. I don't like this tearing sensation in my thigh. I don't like it. I can ignore it for a while. That's one way. I don't look at it. And at a certain point, I want to stretch my leg. It's fine to do it, but just look at it. I want to get rid of it. It's a usual response. If you're blind, if you don't acknowledge that, will we just do it in any way possible? We won't even ask ourselves whether that's skillful or not. That's the problem. So we want to be in a place of acceptance that suffering is part, pain is part of life. And out of that, opening, coming to a place of compassion and investigating, what can I do? And of course, I'm allowed to stretch my leg. I don't need to inflict more harm on me. It's not that I'm not allowed to do it. But what if the pain doesn't go away? if I stretch my leg. So it opens us another possibility of also letting it be. This acceptance, if we look at it, isn't the natural response. The natural response is wanting to get rid of, wanting to deny it. And this like the famous elephant in the room, we deny it's there. That's the one way. We talked about it. The other one is the fighting against it, and I talked about it. So it's an amazing, huge source of suffering. We do that within. We want to get rid of suffering, pain. We do it to the outside. We want to do it if they inflict pain on us, and we also do it if we see pain they have. We don't want to see pain. At least not too long. You know, just one moment. That's enough. And then we act quickly, and then they shall get rid of the suffering. But sometimes the thing when someone comes to us and tells us something, you know, I don't know how, whether you felt that when you were hearing the suffering, the pain people felt in their lives, but it comes up, oh, you should do this, you should do that. Very quickly. And some of it has to do that we want to get rid of the suffering. Just to accept it feels unbearable. Of course, there might be something very clever, and it's not that we're holding back with advice, you know. Not that we're never going to say something and just let them run into their misery, yeah. I don't mean this, but yet, can we simply, out of what place are we coming from? And also be aware that that might be happening to other people. So, sometimes when we are suffering and we share it, and we might get that reaction, we feel, oh, they're shrinking, they're retreating, they don't want to listen, they come with an advice. It's also because they can't bear it. They can't, it's their response to suffering. So sometimes it helps to understand it too. But any denial, any pushing away is creating a split in our hearts. It creates a feeling of incompleteness, of separation. That's painful. Accepting pain sometimes triggers fear, a lot of fear, actually. Fear that the pain will get me, stay within me, be me for the rest of my life. If I open to this suffering, that will be a life in misery. So, that's a question. Is that so? In truth, what's happening there is the delusion coming in. First, everything is permanent. And second, this is me. There's an identification happening. But it's happening. And it's acknowledging that. It's part of the story. It's so real. It's in this moment, it feels like it's going to stay forever. And that's part of the suffering. And that's, you cannot just talk yourself out of it. You cannot just, and really don't do it, tell someone else, oh, well, it won't stay. Oh, that's not you. You know, that's unreal. Just wait a little bit. Live in the midst of suffering. That's really cruel. It's not the place in that moment to hear it. But we all know by the practice, and I feel that so much, the power of the practice and the amazing power, the amazing surprise the practice is offering to us if we really unconditionally open to suffering, to something painful within, something shifts. We experience that. Have you ever experienced this? Something shifting. This pain remains, the loss, the aching, and yet how we experience it changes by accepting, by opening to it. We suddenly feel less burdened. We feel a certain kind of freedom. We suddenly see more than just this suffering. We can see just the leaves, how they move in the wind. We can suddenly hear the birds and be touched in the heart. We can suddenly see what is all right in our life. And if we immerse in suffering, we forget. If we identified with that totally, we can't acknowledge it, we can't feel it. So, accepting suffering gives us the freedom to let it be. And it merely means it does not need to burden us. I remember when I was in Thailand in one of the monasteries, and I got really, really, really sick. So I had to be brought to hospital. And I couldn't walk anymore. I was so out of it. And they took me on a truck, and my teacher, well, he had actually a foot which was somewhat, how you say, permanently distorted, so he had to limp a little bit. But he came down and saying goodbye, and the words he told me, well, if the body is sick, your mind doesn't have to suffer. It's really a message. So I didn't know I would come out of alive. But actually my mind didn't suffer. My body was in pain, and I couldn't drink anything anymore, and was vomiting all over the place. I was having fever, and then I was having something. The mind doesn't have to suffer. It really stuck with me. And even if the mind, if the heart, if we are sad, if we are emotional in pain, if we are grieving, there's something we can fall back into, the heart. The heart does not has to suffer. Strange way. Something we need to, that's the place of freedom. That's where we can let go without that everything is just shining. That's a difficult thing to understand. We can be suffering. We can have that pain. And yet not. There's a place which is unaffected. It's a place of rest. There's a place of that is free and at ease with how things are. There's a possibility of freedom within, containing it all. You see, there's a place that can't be broken. You can call it the enlightened heart. You can call it awakening. And what's striking to me, you don't need to be a Buddhist to experience that. We find quotations of that hint towards our place of inner freedom within the midst of suffering of the writings and sayings of people of all nations, all faiths. And that's where the deepest potential lies of humanity. I want to read you a poem by Vashani. I found in Stephen's wonderful archive. of lots of quotations. You might know it, that's what I'm saying. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of which depth emerges strength. There's a hollow space too vast for words, through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctified into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart, as we break open to the place inside which is unbreakable and whole. It's very beautiful. And this coming out of opening, accepting suffering is the complete opposite of what we are expecting. And it takes a leap of faith to actually do it. The leap of faith to plunge into the suffering, to open into it. And then a miracle will happen. Because we are letting go our clinging around it. We open to something bigger. We open to our heart. The reaction against suffering is that which is called the clinging. We don't want it. It's a form of hanging on to it. It's a form of being entangled with it. We're obsessed by it. How to get rid of it. Totally enmeshed. We want to get rid of it by our very trying we are holding on to. It's so strange. Just the opposite happens. You can observe it. Your thoughts are going round and round and round and round and round that thing you want to get rid of. It's obsessive. It's really attached to it. The pain will remain by doing so. But if we do the opposite, we open into it, we let go. I found a wonderful image in an article by Tanisao Bhikkhu, also out of the archive. And he's talking about his teacher Ajahn Sowat. And he compares the suffering with a mountain. Look at this mountain. They are so heavy. We know that. Just to lift a rock, heavy enough. Just imagine a mountain. We're full of rocks. How heavy that is. And yet, the mountain, just then we feel the heaviness if we try to carry it. Yeah, otherwise we just know it's heavy. But it's actually not a problem. We don't want to carry a mountain around the Alps, you know. And a similar way, the experience we have can be painful, yet we don't have to carry it in our hearts around. We don't have to think about it constantly. It doesn't have to burden the heart. Even it might be still there. There might be still the problem. Sounds huge. Sounds maybe, oh, hard to do. It's simply step by step with the simple examples. When we open into pain, feeling the relief. Feeling the openness in the heart by doing so. And that's why it's so beautiful to do this here, because that's what we encourage you. And this morning, you probably felt that leap of faith to dive into the pain, exploring it, opening it, sharing it with someone, and relief coming out of it. And experiencing this again and again, that is building the faith. So we can do it then with bigger issues. And as I said, if we open to the suffering and can stay open, our natural response will be compassion. And this compassion is the quivering of the heart in the face of suffering. It's a response, it's a little... It's affected by the suffering. And yet it feels like filled with warmth and love. And it's a very nourishing quality for the heart and for our relating to each other. Okay. Let's sit for a few minutes and